Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the After Things podcast, where we talk about things after things. If you have any questions or thoughts, or you want some advice from this questionable team of, I use the word very loosely, experts, we're happy to try to weigh in on that. If you have one, just send it into neshcom@gmail.com with the subject After Things question. And joining us today is Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends.
And the man himself, Bryce Neshcom.
Hi, everybody. How's it going?
All right, gentlemen, let's jump right in. We've got a good one that came in last week, and we didn't get a chance to get to it. And then we will jump into another one. So we've got some good questions from people. This is from Gregory Schultz. He writes, he says, hey, gang, I have a question for the After Things segment. I've tried for years, if not a decade, to try and establish myself as a technology expert. I have my own website, designed my own theme for the website, and even manage my own server. I was a journalism major, so I know how to write a lead and how to not get myself sued for defamation. Very important skills. Before that, I studied to become an IT manager, so I know how to code a Cisco router, subnet, an IPS address, and read a packet header. The problem is that while I consider those to be important, the rest of the world doesn't. How do I differentiate myself from everyone else? How do I build an audience from scratch? I've tried reaching out to other podcasters, but those offers fall on deaf ears. How do you sound professional but not come off needy or desperate? Another problem I've encountered is that since I'm a nobody, it's very difficult to do my job without getting credentials. My breaking point came in 2012 when I tried to cover South by Southwest. The event organizer said, I don't need a press pass to cover the conferences, but the deputized APD South by Southwest volunteer said I did. I went into a tailspin when not one, but five startups refused to interview about their products because, quote, I wasn't Mashable or TechCrunch, end quote. How do you deal with events that prevent you from doing what you want to do? Keep loving those goblins, Gregory. So,
yeah,
we have the goal is he wants to establish himself as a IT expert, ideally in the form of, I guess, maybe podcasting and blogging. And he's having one, trouble building an audience, and two, getting the credibility to be able to cover events. Not that he's harboring a grudge for something that happened 4 years ago, but he is. And understandable.
Yeah.
This is a challenge. Problem number one, is there an audience for what you want to do? That's a big question, because when you talk about these technical concepts, the people who are interested in those know how to do those things, you know? And so are you bringing another level of something information to it? Or are you talking to people who are at the same tech level as you are? Are you bringing something new and different? I read interesting articles on tech when somebody has something new to say or something interesting to say. Now, there are a lot of people covering tech saying the same things as other people are, and it's very, very hard to get into that because unless you're on some platform which is going to elevate you, and even then there's a high turnover on those, you need to have something fresh and different, and you need to know there's an audience for it. So I don't know what you're covering. You've explained to me that you know these things, that you know somebody who takes an IT course in tech should know how to do that. Beyond that, I don't know what your expertise is, and I'm sure there is, but I don't know what that expertise is or how we would put that out there. Second is when people are at events, you know, when you're a tech company or whatever, you pay a lot of money to go to those events. And when you give press access to Mashable or TechCrunch or whatever, they want to have priority. They want to be the ones that get in to go meet that. And when it comes to startups and stuff, I think it's generally, unless time is a big constraint, and that's often a problem where they only have so much time to give interviews. And if you're at an event like there, you know, like South By or some other stuff, they are going to push aside smaller bloggers because their goal is to go to somebody who's got the biggest footprint and the biggest audience. Mm-hmm. Now, the rest of the year, they might be really eager to talk to you. But when they're paying, you know, thousands of dollars a day, and that time is measured in hundreds of dollars an hour, you know, $100 per hour that they have their people there, they want to focus on trying to get those bigger footprints. So you need to try those places outside of where they're all gathered together, you know, or, you know, figure out, you know, when they're doing bigger press briefings and stuff. It's hard to do that. But if you're looking for these stories, if you're actively seeking these stories outside of there, you're going to find a better reaction.
And I feel like this is a sort of domain where you've got your website, and with the rise of things like Medium or how easy it is to sort of be your own writer or your own website, your own publication. Like, do you? Gregory doesn't mention this, but do you have like a portfolio? Have you written articles about?
He's in the chat room,
things?
So he can tell us.
Yeah, you know, because I think when it comes to journalism, that's kind of one thing you've got to have to get in the door is to show that you are able to find a good story, you are able to write it well, you are able to be topical and, you know, timely with what you write about. So hopefully you have some sort of pool of existing work.
Okay. So you want to be a expert in a field. You want to write about it. There's really only one question. What'd you write yesterday? What are you going to write about tomorrow? That's it. Like, keep writing. If you're not writing right now, then this isn't even... We could dissect all the other little elements of it. And we could find out when the best time to interview people and who to interview and who not to interview. All of it is completely useless unless you are writing, if not every day, then you are doing higher quality, longer form stuff multiple times a week.
Yeah, hypothetically, if I went to your website, it's purely hypothetically, and the last article up there was from April, and that was the only article this year, and the last article before that was from June, maybe there's a different website I should be going to, but it's... Well,
And you know, I think for if he's writing this as like, okay, so if I'm going to reboot, like, what do I focus on having gone through that disappointment? Number one, understand that disappointment that you knew, that you saw, you got to price that in. Because subjugating the biggest lesson that I had to learn emotionally about journalism and blogging was subjugation of surface feelings. Subjugation of the feelings that you're bothering somebody to ask them a question. Subjugation of the feelings that you should go eat a sandwich instead of finishing that finishing the article that you're writing. Subjugation of the feelings that you are being rejected when somebody says they don't have time for you. You have to put all of that down to make sure that the work keeps coming out. Because what you're going to find is that there are ultimately two goals. You are building not only the output that you are putting out, but the machine that is putting that out. And that is taking in ideas, synthesizing them, and then outputting them as product. And you have to work on the machine before the output gets better. Like, that's a huge part of it. And the only way that can happen is if you set a schedule, a regular prolific schedule, for which you can stick to. Because past that, then when you can start to think about, okay, let me focus on a niche. Let me find out things that are not being covered correctly that I would like to have a different opinion on. Let me figure out what gets the most traffic. Like, all of that, all of the little elements that come to make a successful online written media personality, like, I could give you, if there existed an exact checklist to get you from where you are right now to lead editor at Mashable, it would do you no good unless you were writing every day or close to every day or multiple times a day.
Recently, Justin was hosted, you know, the GOP and the DNC conventions, one of the hosts for the BitTorrent network. And Justin would have been capable of doing a good job of that when I first started working with him, you know, 9 years ago, 10 years ago, when he came out of school. Justin could have done a very entertaining, comparable job of that. Nowhere near the job that he did now, but he would have been good. He would have been a good personality. He would have really stood out. He was ready for that opportunity. He was ready for those kinds of opportunities. The problem was the world didn't know that he existed. The world hadn't seen what he did, and they didn't see the output that he did. Years later, Justin has his consistent track record, and now are all these opportunities coming his way because people find it's all these different ways into it. You know, that if you only do one podcast a day, an entire year, only write one article every couple months, that means you're losing the opportunity for other people to catch you or find you. And if you're waiting for the world to make you a promise that if you do the work that you will get rewarded, it ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. And I don't think that's you at all, Greg, by the way, but I'm saying just in general, people who are waiting for the world to promise them that if you do this, we will give you this, it's never going to turn out. You have to be doing something because you love to be doing it. You know, when you find the thing, it's like, it is so cliche, but it's the thing you'll do if you didn't get paid. You know, if you didn't get paid to do it, you would do anyways. It's like, you know, it's going to be your passion. And sometimes it works out really well. If the thing you keep doing is the thing you're most likely to get noticed for. So for you, it's like, yeah, you got to keep trying to make a footprint there, but understand, like, yeah, there's a reason why, like, if I'm in the middle of like promoting a book and I only have so many slots or whatever, I got to be selective. If I'm in the middle of writing, then I don't want to do this, but like there are times of year when I will do any podcast anybody asks me to do, and there are times of year when I have to be super selective. So you have to understand where they're coming from, but also kind of look at what you're doing. You're saying to your potential audience, it's not worth writing if I don't think you're going to be reading it, you know? And so that's a way to think about it is like, I don't know if it's worth it to read it. They're selling you. We don't think it's worth it to talk to you to cover us. It's sort of the same thing.
Yeah. But, and so Open Bayou right here in the chat room. This is Greg says on the plus side, I get legitimate traffic and followers from China. Serve them.
Yeah.
You know, if that's a market that you want to talk to, find out what they want to talk about and give it to them. You know, when Andrew and I,
but just a quick, Greg, where is this coming to? Where are they going to? Is there, because the only thing I have here is I found your Open Bayou site and like literally the last article is from April of this year and then, you know, some things from June of last year and then, you know, like it's
even
just,
if it's legacy stuff, it's like just traffic to those old posts from his site, you know, then.
Yeah.
Then,
and I'd be very skeptical of stuff that's a year old that's getting traffic just to know, just in. Maybe it's legitimate, but it's hard to know what qualifies there.
Sure. I mean, sometimes that can tell you stuff. I mean, like there's especially for blog content, you know, there are lessons that you can learn from the posts that have longevity. But you know, when Andrew and I were made the decision to do iTrix, you know, we looked out to all the other magic industry resources and decided on a kind of, you know, a tone of voice. Now this is a fairly good example because there was not a lot there to cover the industry. And really most of the news that everybody got was from forums and stuff like that. And really nobody had tried to do any kind of online regular content that didn't come with an opinion, that wasn't also going to get into the kind of, well, this is what I think about David Blaine and this is what I think about Chris Angel and this is what I think about David Copperfield.
Usually not positive.
and usually, yeah, it's defined by who you think sucks. And so we were very, very careful to try and walk into that. And that was an editorial decision that we made and guided our coverage going forward because we wanted to say, hey, look, we're a place where you can just read the news and you don't got to worry about what my opinion is. In fact, you know, for me, having no history in the magic world, I wound up creating a reputation for having no reputation, right? Like, and that was something that people really enjoyed. So, you know, you do have to think about it. But again, that was a luxury that we had, was to think about how we would go about things because I was willing to write 4 posts a day, 5 yep. days a week.
Like a machine. Like a machine.
That has to, I mean, like, I can't say this enough or more forcefully. None of any of us are saying matters unless you want to write regularly. Unless you not want to, unless you are. Unless you are writing regularly. And that is its own journey through the desert. You know, it's the same thing with podcasting is you are going to put effort and work into things and you are going to look at it and say, I like this or I don't like this. And then nobody's going to read it. And you need to keep doing it because that's the lesson, is that when nobody reads it, you write tomorrow. When everybody reads it, you write tomorrow. That's it. And if you're not, if that's not going to be the way that you are looking at things, then everything else is just, you know, we're going to be telling you a lot of information that just isn't going to come to pass.
And you got to think a lot about the content. Is the stuff you have the same thing that could be found everywhere else? And like, I follow one or two, like I go to Slash Film every, I go to Variety, Deadline, The Wrap, Hollywood Reporter, and maybe Slash Film every day. And if I'm really hankering for some, you know, fan news or whatever, I'll go somewhere else. That's it. I don't need another, you know, I don't need another site that covers the same news everybody else is covering because it's the same damn story, you know, and that's, there's just, in my life, you know, I'm filled up. Nobody's, and people are like, oh, we have commentary. And like most of the commentary I see on that stuff, I think is not that enlightened anyways, you know, and I'm like, no, it's, you know, that's a fan's opinion who doesn't know how the industry's opinion works kind of point of view. So yeah. That's a thing. Like, how do you justify why you were there? And you can pick something to dive deep. You know, when it comes to tech, you know, a guy I don't always agree with, but he's got interesting stuff, is John Gruber with Daring Fireball. This guy really, 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 really made a name for himself by offering some very poignant, sometimes pithy, sometimes bitchy opinions on stuff. And he's informed. He's informed and he talks to, he's friends with developers, he's friends with other people. So he's very good at not just, he's a developer who's coming from the point of view of a developer looking at a lot of these things. He's a guy who many people like, oh, he's an Apple apologist. He's an Apple critic too. You know, when Apple does something stupid, he will tell you this. Although people who see how much he likes that Apple does, they don't pay attention to that, you know. And so anyhow, there, and he's become, you know, in some ways kind of like the Matt Drudge of sort of Apple and sort of tech news to an extent. Of the, you know, one guy who's caught as much, you know, many people follow him as many of your major tech blogs. And by having something interesting to say.
You know, he's somebody that his second act was there, or the evolution of his blog was that he wrote a cogent, smart, well-designed, well-portioned blog from a developer's perspective. And then he wound up becoming In Contact, which has been kind of more publicly talked about more and more with people inside Apple, you know, mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden he's probably getting information before other people are.
And part of his credibility is he created Markdown, which is an extremely useful, you know, way to, you know, to do simplify way as far as, you know, if you want to do sort of, you know, markup language, you know, his markup language way of, you know, if you want to like simple, like create text documents that look nice on the web and all that. And it's a very useful thing that's becoming implemented. So he has a point of expertise too. He's not a, you know, not a quote frustrated developer who never did anything. He's a guy who did something meaningful and had a really interesting contribution. And that is sort of why people listen to him, because, hey, this guy did this cool thing. This guy's doing useful things. And now, oh, he has interesting points of view on other stuff.
You know, there's a million ways to do it. And especially with Medium, you know, it's easier than ever to plug in whatever social media reach you already have into what you are writing about. But, you know, I hate to be a broken record, but write.
Yep. And find the things you're passionate about. You'll find there might be things that you realize, man, I am excited to talk about this, and you will find there are other people excited to read about it. Other ways to contribute, one of my favorite little sites is spacexstats.com, and this is a young guy who said, you know what, when is the next SpaceX launch? When are these things happening? Why don't I create a site that makes it very easy for people to find that stuff? And now it gets championed on Reddit, you know, it's becoming a much bigger, you know, resource for other people. He covers this, you know, a little bit of more of just the objective information about it. And then, you know, another way to build an audience too is you find a Reddit subject you're good at and you contribute on a regular basis, and not to plug your article, but just develop a name. And if occasionally it's like, yeah, I do this other thing or whatever, you can find an audience. So
yeah, hopefully something's there. But we look forward to reading your work.
Yeah, let us know what happens, man. Keep us abreast of what happens, and you know, as things develop. So, we have another one here.
Go, from another one.
Andrew Morris. Howdy, it's back to school time for us teachers, and we recently had a presenter come in to show us some cool strategies to teach vocabulary. Our school recently bought some of the company's educational products, so we got trained on how to use them. Anyway, she mentioned that she was having some trouble finding science literate writers to compose short stories to go along with sets of science vocabulary words. These stories we use to help teach the meanings of the words by using them in context. I hate to say I kind of felt like Randy Quaid's character in Independence Day answering the all call for pilots when I raised my hand and nervously uttered, "I'm a writer. I can write." I talked to her after the training and she said she would send me some examples of the kind of stories they want. Turns out she is the owner and an author of several books. She said they shouldn't be longer than 2 pages front and back. My question to you guys is about the pay. The only thing she mentioned was that she had paid a previous writer per word and it didn't work out well. She said, when I submit a story, I could request how much I think I should be paid for it based on how long it took me to write. She wants it to be enough so that I will be motivated to write more of them. She needs somewhere around 30 of the science vocabulary word stories total. How much would be appropriate to ask for a 1 to 2 page fictional story that requires science expertise and integration of a specific set of words? I reckon it would take me about 3 to 4 hours to write and revise, and I have several retired English teachers in the family I can use to proofread before sending it in. Thanks for advice or any suggestions. First up, Andrew, get in the habit of talking about things per word, because per page is subjective. Per page can be, you know, 500 words on a page, 250 words on a page, or whatever. So just per word is the industry standard in publishing, because that's kind of the closest to an objective measure. So per word, per word, per word. As far as what you should get paid, as much as they'll pay, you know, and that's a difficult question that we all go through when it comes to trying to decide what that is. You know, hey, I worked with one writer, it didn't work out well. Well, shocking, you know, working with writers or artists can be problematic. Figure out what you could do is say, okay, what is your time worth as a teacher? What do you get paid by an hour by there? Add 50% to it. You know, what's going to make you enthusiastic about doing that? Figure out like what you don't want to do it for, but let's say your teacher time, and maybe because it's coming out of time that you could do for other things, maybe you figure out your per hourly time and you double it. That's a starting point to do it. And you could say, hey, let's do 10 for this. Here's my price. And then if you like that and it works out really well, then that would be great. And the quote here says, and she said 2 double-sided pages, which is like 4 pages. This is, yeah, that's, that's scary when, if I'm talking to somebody about prices and publishing and stuff and they use terms like that. So figure out, you know, and the hard part about like, if you said, oh, how much is my time worth as an hour as a writer? I don't know. There's the time I spend at a keyboard, and then there's all the time I spend driving around thinking about something, you know? And so it's variable, but certainly you can figure out how much time it'll take and do that. Starting points. The point is, a starting point one is figure out what you're already getting paid per hour, maybe double it, what you think you should get paid if you wanted to work after hours or whatever. So maybe double time, double what that is, put that out there, say, hey, let's do 10 of these things. If you're happy and she's happy, then great. That's a great price to work with. If it's easy and you feel like you could do more of them or whatever, and you know, you're willing to do a lower price, you do it. But if you feel like, man, I'm not as motivated as I need to ask for more money, do it. You don't have to commit to the entirety of your life in the relationship right now. You can tell her, like, hey, let's do 10 of these things. Oh, this is the price I'll do. And if this works out, fine. If not, we'll figure out something else. So often we enter into these things thinking that, like, once we sign this, if you make the deal permanent, it's deal permanent, but you can do a temporary deal and say, let's just do X amount. I try to do that. I try to go into stuff like, hey, I will charge you this, and if I find at the end of it it's more work than I imagined, then I will ask you for more. If this works out fine, then we'll stick to this.
Is there a rule of thumb on payment per word?
It's all over the place. It is all over the place, you know, because many people who write part-time, you know, there's so many part-time, and it depends on the quality of stuff too. You know, you can mill this stuff out and get a very, very cheap rate where, you know, you might pay somebody, you know, 10 bucks an hour to do something and produce, you know, hundreds. And so it's what matters is quality writing, you know, so writing from somebody who's actually written for, you know, literary magazines, things like that. Now, if you go look at what, say, like what science fiction journals and things like that pay for, they have rates. I couldn't even tell you what those are. It's never what your time is. It's never that. You know, there's nobody really making money doing that. So when it comes to specific technical writing, rates are higher because you have to have a level of expertise.
So I would say, you know, if you're trying to navigate whatever that price is, and she wants to think about things per page, and you know, you need to get to your point where you are thinking about it per word, than, you know, when you write your first, you know, if you were to, I mean, number one, I would say, you know, if it's something that you can knock out in 3 to 4 hours, then it might not be a bad idea to write something out just so you get a sense of what that process is. Take a look at how many words are on per page and then figure out your whatever per page thing based on your a per word rate that you are happy with. I will say this is hard. I mean, judging your own worth, especially in a field where you don't have a whole lot of expertise in, just setting your first your first mile markers in terms of what you're going to get paid is tough, and it's something that I mean, let's say theoretically, somebody on this podcast might be going through right now, is trying to figure out exactly how much to charge for certain stuff, you know, having not done it before. So the best advice I could give is to talk to as many people with as much knowledge on the subject as possible, and then take a number that you are happy with, but put a cap on, like, hey, like let's renegotiate past X amount. Don't, what Andrew said, don't, even if it's not to them forever, don't lock yourself into a prison of, well, I already asked for this and now it's going to be a pain in the ass to renegotiate. Set a renegotiation point at the beginning so you're not punishing yourself.
And I think you can look online for other artists who are offering like freelance writing and commission. There's an artist or an author that I follow on Twitter who has commission rates based on, I think they're based on word counts. And you can look at what other people are charging for. That's a very specific thing, you know, freelance fiction writing, but you can go and see what other people are and see if you're in the right ballpark for what your own time is worth. Because in this scenario, it definitely feels more like a freelancing thing than any sort of, you know, set in stone contract.
Yep. You want to find out what the market will bear and make it bear as much of it as you can. Gentlemen, do you have any picks related to this topic, this subject at all?
Man.
I think I got one.
Yeah.
And I think you've mentioned this before on the show, Andrew, but I really love it. There is a really amazing word processor for iOS that the very few times that I've tried to do writing bits, I've generally preferred to use this, especially for long form writing stuff, rather than, you know, the notes app or mm-hmm. Word or whatever. And it's called Daedalus.
Yeah, so it's getting more complicated now. So Daedalus, the people, oh. the Soul Brothers put that out. They also have Ulysses.
Right, which is the Mac app.
Yeah, and it's now for the iOS too.
Oh, it is?
Yep.
Oh.
And but then here's let me show you. Here is but then what just dropped in the last couple of weeks, which I like a lot of it. Some of it still frets me, but here's Ulysses. Mm-hmm. It's the little butterfly. So Ulysses is now here, but Scrivener is now on iOS.
Okay.
Ooh, Scrivener's the bomb.
Yeah, so Scrivener is on iOS. I would say that it's a really good version of this platform that's on Mac and Windows. It's a great writing thing. My issue with it is the one reason I bought Scrivener was because I wanted to be able to edit stuff on my iPad Pro and have like big screen. But to look at like a whole document on there, it pops up in like a pop-up window, which I think is not the most user-friendly way to do it, which is just drives me nuts. I did go on the support forum and got answered to some other questions about getting a other thing, but I like that. Yeah. So anyhow, not just stomp all over your pick, but I'm gonna say there's some new options out there too. Yeah. So Daedalus and Ulysses are both by Soul Brothers, and now Scrivener.
Yeah, I haven't used Daedalus in a while. I keep seeing that it gets updates and stuff, but what I particularly liked about it is that it added basically a row of punctuation above your keyboard so that you could, you know, if you were starting, or it wouldn't just be punctuation. It would also be like intelligent, so it would know when you were opening and closing a quote, or when you were doing markdown formatting. So I like that, but yeah, I haven't checked it out in a minute, but that's what I liked using when I was doing a little bit of writing, and it wasn't very expensive.
Yeah, it's funny. Like on a Scrivener forum site, I was asked about compiling. Besides compiling, you know, because the problem they had was trying to get a word count, and the one thing they had, the advice was like, oh, you can go compile your folder and go do da da da. I'm like, I asked a question like, besides compiling and going through these three steps to get a total word count, is there another way?
Yeah.
And somebody offered me a helpful way, but then their site admin said, oh, well, you know, you can go compile the folders to get a word count. And it's like, you didn't read my question. You know, it's like,
stripes.
Yeah, it's like, how do I respond to this?
I want to, you know, in terms of writing, I've been writing a little bit more on Medium. I do enjoy Medium. I think that they are, since blogging was kind of, you know, since the dawning of blogging, there's always been this, sort of weird, transitional point of, all right, I like to write, but then where do I write? And then I know that what my blog looks like, I will be judged for, but I need to have some kind of unique flair because I don't just want to write it on something where anybody can write. Yeah, you know, I don't want to just publish a Google Doc, right? And I think Medium does a good job and has, more importantly, been kind of accepted into the social marketplace as like a place where good writing can be done. So I would very much encourage, if you are trying to do stuff and you want to do stuff every day, Medium makes it very easy to write and share stuff. And you don't have to pretend to be an expert in another social media thing like Facebook or Tumblr to already connect it to people. There are some people that just surf Medium as a place to read. You know, a few major media outlets have poured their time and effort into using it as their main publishing platform. So I would suggest go ahead and trying that out.
And what I like about Medium, I didn't even notice this feature, is that when you browse through their website, it'll even tell you like how long it would take to read that article. So yeah, even before you dive in, you can kind of get a litmus of like, you know, this will be, you know, 11 minutes. This will only be 8 minutes. This is just, you know, a 4 minute sort of news article. I think Medium has definitely taken the torch of blogging, where something like Tumblr has tried to make it like very content and very
visual.
Well, I
mean, Tumblr is a social media platform, right? Like, yeah. Tumblr is there so you can connect with people. And yeah, it is for publishing, but that's almost incidental.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's one of the problems with Tumblr, is that they saw there was a lot of social integration, and they said, we're really a social media platform, but it's a half-assed one at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's why it's been suffering. It's just because it's like, hey, this is where you can create a blog. This is great. Oh, you know, people like to share this, so let's create this sort of reblog thing. But like, yeah, but that's, you're only going to have a certain amount of that. You know, you're not Instagram. You know, you're not Twitter. And I think that was one of the problems with Tumblr, is they became less of a original content creation thing, and that's why I think they've had problems. I love Tumblr. Love Tumblr. Yeah, but it's
say this about Instagram? I think I've kind of gotten I'm dead on Instagram now. I used to go there 2-3 times a day, and since they did their algorithm, I always just see the same things whenever I go in. I think that they took they're geniuses that have made literal billions of dollars, but like, I think that that was a big setback for me.
And
I actually wore it.
I didn't know they got rid of the timeline. That's really, really dumb.
Yeah, they went algorithmic, and now like when you open up, let's say, your mobile client, it has like a row of like, who are people you follow a lot who have a new post? It's like, yeah, but that one thing from the person I follow at least who surprises me is worth it, and you can't predict that. And that's the problem, is they got rid of part of the novelty that you AI ain't there yet. I like to see an order of what people are up to today and going back. And when they change that, it's like, I'm not a Facebook guy, you know? And again, yeah, they're making billions of dollars without my business. They could care less about me. But like, it was a platform that, one, as a content creator, I will go in there and do Facebook Live, which is fun, but I know it's only a matter of time before they make it not fun. I don't like to go in there to look at posts because it's so algorithmic. And the trying to engineer what we're going to show you drives me nuts, that I just go less and less and less. And, you know, listen, these people are brilliant. They know what they're doing, and I'm getting old and not suited for it.
yeah, no, it's one of those things that I was kind of surprised at how much I don't go there as much anymore, and you know that it's not even just like a digest. Like I think like for all the mistakes that Twitter has made, and Twitter has made plenty of them, having just the while you were away, just you know three posts that were liked a lot and shared a lot, you know from the last time that I logged in, like that's fine, that's cool. Give me a little digest. Yeah. Otherwise, like I don't need my whole feed to be curated, you know.
Yeah. And it gets into like kind of Marshall McLuhan talking about like the difference between like TV and radio and push and pull mediums. You know, a newspaper's neat because you dip in, you go back into where you want, and the web became that. And now you have news sites that are trying to push video because they get more ad dollars for video views, and they're trying to push it into like a website becomes a channel with all this video. And I think that in the short run, it may be helpful as far as revenues, but in the long run, it just sort of pushes you towards other mediums. And I think that when sites decide, oh, what, you know, we looked at the success, the fantastic success of Facebook becoming, you know, humongous giant of a company, and people are like, we need a part of that. And it's like, yeah, but you're not going to do the thing you do really well, and chances are you're going to die, you know, instead of doing that other thing. But, yeah, you know. We'll see. Well, but Instagram's been having success, I think, with their new stories and stuff. And
yeah, I'll tell you what, though. Place to spend more and more time is Snapchat. Loving Snapchat. Yep. It's I finally figured out the way to describe it to people of why I like Snapchat. It's I've always kind of wanted to do vlogging, but I don't like shooting and editing. And so Snapchat is here for me. All I got to do is just one take vlogging. With no editing.
That's perfect, actually. And then you get the stories element, which, like...
It all strings together?
Kind of a... Yeah.
Like, as soon as that clicked in my head, where I'm like, oh, all I gotta do is just talk about whatever I want, and anybody who wants to talk back to me will talk back to me, and not think of it as a messaging app, which is, I think, initially what I had a hard time getting over. But as soon as I cracked that, yeah, that it's no edit vlogging... I was like, all right, sweet. Because that was the only thing that stopped me from doing vlogging on YouTube. It's like, I like talking into a camera. That whole like watching it and lighting it and audio and editing, oh, for the birds.
Yeah. Well, and that makes me want to use Snapchat more because I have no idea how you were supposed to use it. I mean, I get you can use, you know, direct one-to-one communication, but like the story thing I didn't understand and... It didn't seem like there was much interaction in that element.
The main attraction is stories.
Right.
Is you just go there, you watch your friend's stories, you comment on snaps that you like, you know, otherwise you just let it go by. And then for your own content, either you don't have it and you are just a viewer of other people's stories, like Twitter, like a lot of people have Twitter accounts and don't tweet, or you just, you know, talk about what's going on in your day.
Huh. Very cool. Andrew, did you have a pick?
My pick was just sort of riding on your pick was with the suggestion. Scrivener. I think people who use Scrivener should check it out.
Gotcha.
Despite my little frustration on a couple of things that it does. It is a fantastic app. The iOS reviews on it have been amazing. And it is a, you know, on desktop, it's been a great resource.
Very cool.
Gentlemen, it's been after.
You're gosh darn right.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.